Welcome to the Rockstar Achievers Podcast with your host, Catherine M. White, founder and CEO of Accelerated Results 365. If you're an overachiever who's ready to hear what today's bleeding-edge, successful professionals are doing to create success in their business, you've come to the right place. On the show, Catherine interviews rockstar achievers who share their incredible tips, such as how they plow through roadblocks, outsmart the competition, grow a flourishing business, and reach unparalleled levels of performance. So kick back and get ready for a power-packed, insightful discussion with today's Rockstar Achiever.
Welcome to the show. Today's Rockstar Achiever is Sheldon Sweeney, a financial advisor with Pacific Capital Resource Group. He has been with PCRG since 2012, and he enjoys helping families who are planning for retirement, as well as helping business owners who need advice on creating an exit plan while protecting the business that they have worked hard to build. Sheldon is extremely passionate about helping families and their children with special needs, thus focusing on a significant portion of his practice on helping these families. He connects with them on a personal level. With his youngest daughter having Down syndrome, it helps him have an understanding for them and the extra demands that this puts on their families, as well as the needs that they have for high quality planning. When he's not working, he enjoys family time with his wife, Debbie, and his five adult children, as well as open water swimming, hiking, and trips to the ocean. He is also very engaged in the local community of Bellevue and his hometown of Maple Valley, and he is involved in several different organizations in which he helps, many of which are related to organizations with who help families or service families with children with disabilities, as well as other organizations. Now, one of the really interesting things about Sheldon is the path that he's taken to get to where he is today in the financial services industry. And I'm going to go ahead and turn this over to you, Sheldon, and let you share your story about how you got here.
All right, Catherine. Well, thank you very much. Thanks for the kind introduction, and it's an honor to be on your show today. So yeah, it definitely was a unique path. I think obviously everybody has a story about how they got to a certain point in their professional life. And I grew up in Southern California, and I spent a lot of time surfing, playing water polo on the beach and everything. But one of the I got to do a lot was sailing. And one of my particular family friends had a sailboat, and we'd sail around L.A. Harbor, and we'd go by these huge ships. And he goes, you can go to a school and be a captain on one of those? I was like, you're kidding me. And I'm, like, pretty spontaneous. So I was like, I want to go there. I end up going to this California Maritime Academy on the San Francisco Bay. I get a third mate Coast Guard license. I get this, Bachelor of Science. It was called Nautical Industrial Technology, So I kind of enter the whole maritime world, and I was going to be on ships. And then I met my wife, and I thought maybe being gone 6 months at a time wasn't the best for a marriage. So I'll work in the shore time, shoreside area. So I was in the Port of Los Angeles for a couple of years working, and then they offered me a transfer up to the Port of Seattle. So I was terminal manager in Port of Seattle. And then they said, we want you to go to Hawaii. So we actually got to live in Honolulu. I worked in the operations manager, Port of Honolulu, for a couple of years. And then they said the next stop was Oakland. And at that point, Debbie was pregnant with our second child. And we're like, we don't really want to live in Oakland. We just fell in love with the Northwest. So we decided to sink roots down in the greater Seattle area, moved back here. I switched careers. And we have ended up having five children, all born in Seattle. And they say, why'd you do that? It's so cold up here. Why didn't you stay in Southern California? But it's really been a wonderful journey for our family. We're super in love with the Northwest. And then my career journey professionally, it took me into sales. So I kind of got burned out on the whole corporate life. I didn't answering to the board of directors and getting waken up at 4 a.m. asking me, where's the barge that left Honolulu? It should be in Kailua by now, or it should be in Kahului, and what's going on? And I just thought, I just had this sort of fascination with sales. I thought with my personality that I was sort of destined to be in sales. So I was reading all these books by Dale Carnegie and Og Mandino, and I ended up meeting this woman who said she was developing a sales department. So I spent a fair amount of time in what would be called industrial sales with heavy equipment. And that was all based in the state of Washington. And then kind of my family story started to get a little more intense. And I don't know if I should dive into that right now, but essentially, professionally, I switched gears and entered the insurance world. So it was specifically on life insurance to begin with. And that was kind of my gateway into the financial services industry. So then that grew into being a full financial advisor, being able to do investments and full-fledged retirement planning. And then through my family story, really began to focus on families who have children with special needs. And that's kind of where I'm at today. So kind of three distinct career paths, you know, first the maritime industry, then the sales and heavy equipment, and then ultimately into financial services. So I feel like a lot of things came together, but it was essentially through the journey of being a husband and a father, and following that path led me to, you know, my different professional choices.
Mm-hmm. Wow, those are definitely very distinct career paths and fascinating. And what I think, or what I thought of as I heard you share that, is, you know, thinking back to when we're young, back, you know, trying to figure out, we're going to college, what are we going to study? And then also comparing that to young adults nowadays that are trying to figure out what they want to do with the rest of their life. And I don't know about you, but I remember being so stressed out about, I don't know what I want to do, or I thought I wanted to do this one thing, and then I went to college and I realized I wanted to do something else. And then I graduated college, and that really wasn't the path I really truly loved and wanted to take either. And what I'm getting at is we spend so much time worrying about what we want to do for the rest of our life and feeling like when we go to college and we get a degree, that's the end all. That's where we have to go. And what you're expressing here is it's not like that. It doesn't have to be that way.
Yeah, I'm like a huge advocate for just continually keeping your ears open, and especially like having really good friends around you. I think a lot of times our close friends, they see skills and abilities in us that we don't necessarily see in ourselves. And that can be a really indicator of where we need to adjust and change. So like in my, we all have our own personal stories, but like my dad worked in this super top secret, like aerospace industry. I think it had something to do with satellites, but it was literally like so classified that he's like, I'm like, Dad, why can't you tell me what you're doing? He goes, well, I'd have to kill you, you know? I mean, it was like, so it wasn't like I could go, oh, I could follow the career path of my dad. I literally have no idea, you know, what he did. So mm-hmm. I felt like the world, I would just go out there and make something happen. My granddad was a entrepreneur, and he ran a huge laundry dry cleaning place down in San Diego. So that was a formative event for me. I had to work in there for a summer folding sheets with a lot of nice ladies that had green cards that came up from Tijuana. And he said, you know, if you don't go to college and better yourself, you're probably be folding sheets the rest of your life. I was like, wow.
That's scary.
Thanks for the lesson, Gramps. That was pretty effective. So uh-huh. That kind of, you know, motivated me to go to college and everything. But then I really do think that people, it doesn't matter. Like I'm 56 years old right now. And I just feel like I've had more energy than I've ever had in my whole life. I'm like, I have so much hope in the future. I'm so excited. And all these career paths, all these changes, I've just met so many wonderful people on the journey. And so I, young people, I totally understand that angst, you know, when you're like, what direction should I go? You just, sometimes you're going to have to make it up as you go along, you know? I mean, just if it doesn't feel right where you are, make an adjustment. And fortunately, I have a very understanding wife. I mean, we've been married 30 years, and she just had, by the time I was 12, I'd moved 12 times. So I thought people were supposed to move like every 3 years. And that was the nature of my dad's career. So when my wife is like, all right, let it, you know, after I moved her like 3 or 4 times, she's like, I don't like this. Let's kind of plant some roots down. Mm-hmm. So I've been fortunate that although I've made these career adjustments, it never really strained our marriage. Somehow my wife has trusted me through all these gut instinct moves that we've made. So
mm-hmm. That's definitely helpful to have someone supportive by your side.
Yes, super important.
Mm-hmm. So speaking of your wife, you've got quite a story in regards to your family. Share a little bit about that, Sheldon.
Yeah, I would just go back, I'll rewind 21 years ago. We were pregnant with our first daughter. So we'd had 3 very healthy sons born, and then with our daughter's birth and my wife's pregnancy in that, She got diagnosed with lupus, and it was really terrifying. It took forever to figure out, what is this? What's going on with this autoimmune disease? So it just came to, one day the doctor called me in and said, look, your wife's going to die, and your daughter in the womb is going to die. And I was like, can we come up with some other alternatives?
No, that one's not going to work for me.
So, we're in Seattle. We're in this high-tech, just mecca of UW medicine and Children's Hospital and all this stuff. I'm like, can we kind of reach out and ask some more questions? There's got to be some resolution. So really was just through, I was just praying really hard one night. I was sitting in the nurse's station, and this woman came up behind me. She says, what are you doing in the nurse's station? I said, well, it appears everybody's given up on my wife. So I thought I'd read her medical file. And she just shoves me out of the way.
Wow.
And she looks at the file and she says, this is an autoimmune disorder. We've got to get her into intense program here, stat, or she is going to die. And that changed her. That saved her life first time. And then we had some issues with her heart, and ultimately they delivered Annie early, and she was just born so tiny that we could just barely even, just hold her. She's like a baby bird. The nurse with me, she said, take your wedding ring off and slide it over her hand and let it dangle from her elbow, because you're never going to remember how tiny she was. And they proceeded to tell me all these doom and gloom stories. She wouldn't walk right. She wouldn't talk. She wouldn't develop. And she's ended up being in ballet. She's away at college right now. She is just a stellar young woman. And so that turned out not to be true. But that was kind of my first brush getting close to disabilities and special needs, seeing my wife get taken down, seeing Annie be born in that traumatic process. So we went about 6 months, and then my wife, the lupus came back. It went into her kidney that time, and they told me again, she's going to die. There's no chance of saving her. But we made it through that. And then about a year later, Charlotte was born with Down syndrome. So that definitely opened the door into our special needs community. And then about 6 years after that, one of my sons was diagnosed with bipolar disorder. So we helped him through that. And I think just being in the special needs community, to my angle has always been to just, hey, you got a diagnosis, no big deal. Lots of people, everybody's suffering from something. If you got a label for it, you're kind of fortunate because you know how to treat it. So just my son's experience was kind of interesting because when he got out of the psych ward, we got him back in school. He was only 6 months from being able to graduate high school, and all his buddies rallied around him, the teachers, the school counselors said, hey, Paul, anything you need. And he's a very intelligent kid. So he buckled down and he graduated on time. It was really a cool story. So to this day, he manages it very well. But all those things I learned through all those different kind of life and death, disability in and out, those are pieces I can share with families now, and has really given me this huge drive and passion to serve families that have children with special needs, alongside the traditional planning I'll do for what I would say are traditional families just trying to plan out a retirement or a business exit plan. So it's a fun life.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that is a very incredible story. And I love that when you were told that your wife was not going to survive, your child, unborn child, was not going to survive, you were not willing to take that as an answer. And so many people, most people, would have accepted that and just, taken that as truth, as reality, gone about life, preparing for that to be the answer. And you're like, no way, that is not working for me. We're going to find a better answer. And that's exactly what you did.
Yeah, that was, I got to say, I have a very strong faith life. I'm Catholic, and I had a huge community of prayer that was around us. So I kind of felt like that was guiding me through that process. But yeah, I do distinctly remember sitting in a boardroom, and we had 12 doctors, 12 specialists around the table, and they allowed me to sit at the head of the table. And I really gave them a what's for. Come on, people. And they said, well, maybe there's a way we could get her and induce her pregnancy and all that. So, but I was really guided in a lot of ways by prayer and through my, a lot of outside support. So it certainly wasn't just me.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. And do you think that your career path and everything that you talked about earlier, do you think that that had played a role in impacting how you handled this situation?
I think so. I really love the maritime industry and the dynamics of how weather, and you're guiding these huge ships around, where you have a lot of unknowns, but you're charting a course. You're always just charting a course. So I've always had this kind of sense of adventure and that, hey, it's going to work out. I think somehow I was just born with a lot of optimism. So I've just always thought, hey, there's going to be a way. But I've had my times. I've definitely had my times where I've felt really down and just out. But I mean, I kind of go back to like I love Dale Carnegie, you know, and he says, hey, you know, when you smile, the world smiles with you. So there's the most depressed times I've had in my life. I literally just said on those days and I woke up, I'm going to force myself to smile today. I'm going to smile at people. Mm-hmm. And people always smile back. And then I'd feel really good. I'd be like, well, they're smiling. Oh, I'm smiling, you know? And that was kind of how I guess I handled the tougher times, you know? But yeah, so business-wise, there's been some, I'd say, deep down cycles mm-hmm. on the business journey. So maybe at some point I'll share about that as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, why not now?
Well, there was a point in time as I transitioned into the financial industry right before I came on board at Pacific Capital. I'd had a business partner and come to find out after really trusting a business partner, you know, he had embezzled like $60,000 from me.
Oh, no.
And so when kind of all the skeletons came out of the closet, I felt like I was experiencing what it must be like to go through a divorce where you really, you know, you have this person, you trust them with all your, you know, inner feelings and secrets and how to, you know, we're building this business together. And to come to find out when that person's not being transparent and honest, it was really devastating. So I felt, you know, totally taken advantage of. And that was probably the hardest thing I'd ever had to recover from. And then as I got on board with Pacific Capital and all the tools they have really for entrepreneurs who are in the financial service industry, it really helped me step out of that. So I felt very fortunate to get connected into their process. But those I would say business wise were my darkest times, having to go through this sense of betrayal. And then how do you maintain your client relationships through that? But I'm very open and transparent with my clients. So my closest clients, I didn't get into the gory details, but they knew I was going through some rough times. And it was a lot of them really rallied around me. They're like, well, hey, you know, we've been through tough stuff too. I think one of them pulled me aside and said, well, I should have told you, you know, you got to have a written exit plan. Partnerships very rarely work out. Mm-hmm. That's just the reality. I was like, oh, well, why didn't you tell me that before? You know? So, but you know, everybody has those, I think those life lessons, and especially in business, you try different things, you try partnerships, you try ventures, and you definitely learn the most through failure. So failure has been a good friend of mine, and where I learned the most lessons.
I love that. A good friend of yours.
I make lots of friends. And, you know, that's just a way to frame it, right? I mean, it's either you're going to go down and just stay down. But, again, my wife has just always been by my side, and she'd literally just kick me in the butt and say, come on, man, you know, it'll work out. Keep going. Get up, go.
Yeah, sometimes you just got to have that person that kicks you in the butt and moves you forward.
Totally, snap you out of it, you mm-hmm. know. So, yeah, self-loathing isn't a very good strategy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, Sheldon, I appreciate you sharing that, because so many people, they get into entrepreneurship, and many people have this idea that if I go into entrepreneurship, it's going to be easy. I don't have to account to anybody. I'm in control of my life. I'm in control of my time. I can do what I want when I want. And a lot of people have this unrealistic view of what entrepreneurship really means. And they're looking at, they want the rewards of entrepreneurship. And there, of course, are many rewards of being an entrepreneur. But so often people look right over what is the reality of what entrepreneurship is. And you're sharing that. You're sharing that there are challenges. There are things that come up that we never even expect. You can be blindsided by somebody who you totally trusted, and they end up taking you for quite a ride. And regardless of that, regardless of the challenges, you show the strength and determination of using those experiences to learn from them and to drive your business forward and drive your personal life forward.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, because people like to do business with people with character. And unfortunately, the only way to build character is to go through some really, really hard times. I mean, you don't meet many people where everything's been a bed of roses and they're like a super solid character. I mean, most people of stout character have really suffered multiple times in their life and they've just gotten through it. And I have a lot of respect for those stories. Those are great stories. And yeah, in the entrepreneurial world, I say the phrase I like, you know, is that, you know, the good news is that it's, you know, it's like all up to you. And the bad news is that it's also all up to you. So you're kind of walking this tightrope where you have unlimited upside, but you can fall a long ways as well because there's no safety net of a salary or anything like that. And not every, that's why not everybody does it. Not everybody's designed for that. And, but that's, you know, part of the things we figure out. Do I want to be in a corporate environment where am I feeling confined in that, or is that just my happy spot and I like having that routine pay coming in, or do I want more potential but understanding there's more downside? So it's kind of this risk analysis goes on constantly.
Absolutely. Entrepreneurship is not for everyone, and some people do work better and flourish more in that corporate setting.
So it's good. That's healthy. That's a healthy part of the, I guess, journey through what is going to be our life's work. How do we find that? And I think it's good to, if you're fortunate to be able to switch careers and go to some different places, you've really tested the grounds. Like, hey, I mean, I always thought what a shame it would have been if I had just stayed where I was at. I wasn't happy, but if I had stayed there, I would have never met all the folks that I've met now. I don't feel like I would have been as much service as my I was ultimately called to deliver into the communities I'm involved in now. I would have never been here. I would have been on a whole different path. So it's kind of interesting to look back once in a while. But I enjoy looking forward. I always just can't wait for the next day to see what's going to come up. And now here we are in fall, you know. I love the fall. I love the storms. I love storms coming through.
Well, that's good because
I love seeing the wind blowing the trees around, and I like watching on the weather. You know, I still, as my nautical background, I love looking at weather charts and charting storms and see what they're going to do, where they're going to go. So this is one of my favorite times of year when the fall storms start blowing through the Northwest.
Well, that's good because you have certainly lived through a number of storms. No pun intended. No.
The ones that make you stronger, right? Those kind.
Absolutely. And speaking of storms and making you stronger, kind of on that or a similar line there, you also have a passion for being very adventurous.
I've always liked a lot of different sports. You know, initially I grew up swimming and was in the pool from like age six. My mom says that if there was ADHD drugs back in the day, you know, I'm growing up in the 60s, she would have definitely had me on a high amount of those drugs because I was just so hyper. And so her thing was just to keep throwing me back in the pool. I get out, I get thrown back in. So I swam a lot of laps, and I swam in at the time we were living in California and San Diego. And then we moved to Australia for my dad's job. I swam in Australia. We came back. I swam in Colorado. Came back to California, transitioned to water polo. And then in Southern California, you know, just surfed a lot. And one of our favorite things to do is to go out on the stormiest days and just see how huge of wave could we get hit by. And we'd wait on the inside. We were just nuts, but we were in such good physical shape. I mean, we were swimming and water polo, and I was in the water all the time. And then when that transitioned out on the boats and little sailboats, on the stormiest days, we'd shrink that sail down and to just see how much the boat could handle, how much we could handle, and just be pounding through the waves. And then, you know, swimming's just always been this huge part of my life. So no matter what I did, that was sort of my go-to as my stress relief. So I just began, I'd always go back in the pool. I'd always go swim laps. And then in the Pacific Northwest, we have these beautiful open water areas, so beautiful lakes, the Puget Sound. And there's been quite a huge increase in the number of people doing these giant open water swims. So the English Channel has always been considered like one of the most challenging swims in the world. But there's you start scaling down from that, and there's all these multiple kinds of swims you could do in open water. And to me, that's just the most freeing thing ever. It's just to be out there in nature. I get to commune with my salmon, you know, and just just swim along, see the sunlight just piercing down, slicing through the water. So I've begun to experiment with how cold of a water I could swim in. So I'll try to swim year round, you know, in the lake. So it gets down to about 39 degrees in our local lake in our neighborhood. So that tends to be more of an in and out. But this year I'm going to see how long I can go at that temperature. There's people that swim in the Antarctic right now. They have they call them ice swims. So a lot of the Norwegians and stuff, and some folks from Ireland and England, they're pretty good swimmers in cold water. So there's a bit of an underground cult of cold water swimmers out there.
and you get your fair share, maybe not quite to that extent, but
yeah, I just find it very invigorating because it's kind of like sales, or it's kind of like anything, you know, public speaking, where you kind of get wound up. You think about, oh, there's this cold water. So I do it for multiple reasons. I really believe there's some health reasons. There's some physiological reasons in the mind and in the body that it's just so invigorating to take on this challenge. Like, you know, it's going to hurt. You know, it's not going to be good. I mean, I just enjoy it because I enjoy overcoming the fear of getting in and submerging. And then when you get out, there's just this whole sense where you're just completely alive. And whether that's been a long, you know, multiple mile swim, or sometimes it's just really cold and you're in and out, there's just something extremely invigorating about it. But at the same time, each time you sort of have to overcome this sense of it's different and it's not something you're doing every other minute of the day. So there is that challenge or sort of adventure aspect to it. And I don't recommend this for everybody, right? I mean, I love the water. I love to be wet. And so I would never make anybody do this kind of thing. But the people who are predisposed to it do just find it very invigorating. And it has a lot of translations to me. There's even studies that show it helps with depression. Mm-hmm. Because it's just so shocking. You kind of go into survival mode, mm-hmm. and then a lot of other things are less important. You know, it's like, I'm just strictly surviving right now. And you don't push it too far and whatever, but it's, for me, it works very well, but I wouldn't recommend it for everybody.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Please speak to your physician before trying.
Exactly. Yeah. Put a big disclaimer. I'm not trying to get people to jump in the frigid water. Definitely consult your physician first.
Right. Wow. Well, you have so much to your story. You've been through so many different things. Cold water, extreme cold water, betrayal, near death in your family, disabilities, and the list goes on. And you have conquered all of these, Sheldon. That I can see how all of those things have built your character into this really strong, powerful individual.
Yeah, well, thank you. And I mean, like I say, it's not, I think there's only so much we can attribute to ourselves, but we really need friends and a community around us. And there's been just so many times where other folks have either helped pull me up, or a lot of different mentors in my life, you know, especially in the financial services. One of my mentors, he always says, remember, this is a get rich flow scheme. Mm-hmm. You don't get rich quick. You work very, very hard. You're very, very underpaid for the early years. And then there's a turning point. Mm-hmm. So I just really appreciate all the different relationships I've had over the years and how other people have been able to see things in me and qualities that I could then develop that I, you know, we literally can't see in ourselves. So I'm just a big proponent of surrounding ourselves with good people, good networks, and good folks that we can share the journey with.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. All very important. Thank you, Sheldon. Thank you for sharing your story and sharing yourself with us today.
Absolutely. My pleasure. Thanks. Thanks for letting me be myself and making me comfortable to share.
You are welcome.
Thank you for tuning in to the Rockstar Achievers Podcast. If you are looking to reach new levels of success by plowing through your roadblocks, outsmarting your competition, growing a flourishing business, or reaching unparalleled levels of performance, go to www.acceleratedresults365.com or email Catherine@acceleratedresults365.com and learn how you can get started with Accelerated Results 365 today.